Hello, everybody, and welcome to Big Episode 7 of the Fan to Fan Podcast. You're either enjoying this podcast through the fine folks at pwponderings.com or through the folks over at the Russell Folks Podcasting Network. If you're not already, subscribe to both through iTunes, leave a kind, perhaps five-star review, and if you don't have anything nice to say, just don't bother. I want to give a big thank you to everybody who responded positively to last week's episode that I had with Nick Manoa. I had a great time doing it. Nick seemed to really enjoy it. I had more feedback for that episode, I think, than any other one so far, and everything was super positive. So I'm glad everyone enjoyed it. I'm glad the fun that Nick and I had talking to each other translated to all of you. Makes me happy. It encourages me to do more of these episodes and get guys like Nick on here. So hopefully he'll be back one day. I want to try to not do repeat guests right off the bat. The show's still in its infancy. We haven't even hit double digits yet, people. So, but... Yeah, Nick's a guy I'd love to get to know more about because I'm sure he has just stories upon stories to share. But speaking of stories, my guest this week is Drew Cordero, Denver, Colorado, the man, not the place. Probably best known as being the man, the mind behind Beyond Wrestling. He also runs WSU. And I apologize to all women's wrestling fans out there. We really did not touch on WSU much. To be honest, I haven't really seen much of the company, so I think it would feel a little insincere talking about it. But Drew, I've known, I want to say, for about 5 years now. He and I both used to write for the Cool Kids Table website. We get into that a little bit here. But I was one of the first people, I think, when Beyond Wrestling's first DVD came out of Bosses and Busters, that he contacted me. He knew PW Ponderings was not even a year old at that point. And he asked if I'd give the show a look. And I decided to give it a look. And I wondered what this show I was watching with okay video quality in a garage in Elyria, Ohio was. But to be honest with you, the wrestling was pretty darn good. And some of the guys I had sort of heard of through the internet, just by name, really hadn't seen a ton of matches, and a lot of the people were new to me. But what I knew is I was pretty impressed. And it's cool to me because I kind of got into Beyond Wrestling as it was first starting, and I've basically seen every show they've put out. I've kept up with it on YouTube. And to see how much growth this company has in 3 years is actually pretty cool, despite the fact that Drew is a buddy of mine. It's cool to have started this company its infancy and then watched it grow and become what it is today. Their show American Rana, which took place last July, has been getting a ton of praise and buzz from both fans and wrestlers alike. And it's not every day you see a wrestler go to a show and then come home and just give a glowing review of it. Usually they'll say something nice about it, but it seemed like everybody, including guys like Kevin Steen, who made their debut for the company, were really going out of their way to put it over. So you knew there was just something special there, and it makes me really proud just to see a company that I've been following for so long hit its zenith. But it always wasn't that way, and Drew and I will talk about that. And what's really cool about this to me is you get to really get inside of Drew's head in this one. He talks about the American Rana show, kind of how that came together and why certain things happen. Like, for example, he'll talk about why he booked a match, and the answer won't be like, these two have been having a grudge and it was time to finish. No, he'll tell you like the real reason why he decided to put these matches together. I think this is a really honest and insightful look into what goes through a person's head when they're booking a company or putting a card together and just what it meant to him. And of course, a little bit into it, we talk about how Drew got into wrestling, and I'll talk a little bit about backyard wrestling and working for Kaiju Big Battle and a little bit for Chikara and commentating and things of that ilk. And it's a very, very interesting fan-to-fan, way different than any of the other shows we've done so far. And I had a really good feeling about it. You know, Drew's been a guy who's been on a ton of podcasts or Pro Wrestling Ponderings to hype Beyond Wrestling and things of that nature, because it's something that we believe in. It's a really cool concept. It's really unique. It's really fun. And again, it's something positive, I think, in the world of professional wrestling. And I'm glad he gets to talk about it. Hopefully, if you've not heard of Beyond Wrestling, you'll get to learn a lot about it here. And if you've heard of Beyond Wrestling, this is a little more honest look at what you've been seeing lately. And of course, getting to know Drew as a person, which I didn't even know him as well as I thought. I got to learn a lot of cool things about him. So hopefully you'll sit back and enjoy an hour of Drew and I talking. So after the music, you're going to hear us have a little chat. Good time. Fans of podcasting, this is Kevin Ford, my guest this week, Drew Cordero, Denver, Colorado, the man, not the place, either one works.
I think I do a way better introduction than that.
Well, I know I gave you, you shit on Twitter for it. Though I do kind of like it's something dependable. It's like your little signature.
At least you know you're watching Beyond Wrestling, right?
Like... Well, but I was watching the reason I busted your balls for it is I was watching the first Wrestling is Respect show that you did commentary on. You said fans of Wrestling is Respect. I think I said out loud, it's the first show. Like, fuck you. There's no fans of this company yet.
There's still no fans.
Wow. Okay. I'm keeping that in.
I blame that on Biff Busick. Or that's not even what he's called there.
Franco
Whatever,
O'Rourke.
Man. Don't you have to ask me about, like, things that I like?
I was just busting your balls. That's how these podcasts work.
No. I'm just busting balls, too. I like doing the Wrestling with Respect shows. It's a cool little building. I mean, the fans that come out obviously come because they like wrestling. And it's been some pretty good shows so far in the lineup that they got. The two matches announced for the next one. Kind of bummed I won't be there, so maybe I'm talking out of jealousy that I didn't get to pull the trigger on these matches first.
Well, there's four matches announced, so that's it.
Well, there's only two that matter.
Fair enough. Hey, but you know, I'm a big Biff Busick fan, and you know, like, not to suck your dick or anything, but like, not for Beyond Wrestling, like, who knows what all these opportunities he would have gotten.
Yeah, you know who was really pushing for him is that guy Harry.
Yeah, from Harry Golucky, the photography.
Yeah. Because I was just like, Biff Busick, that's a stupid name. I don't want this guy wrestling for me. And then when he finally came, he was like, I'm going to wrestle as Christopher St. Gerard. And I was just like, okay. And then I didn't remember what he said his name was going to be. So I just called him Biff Busick. I was like, this is a fucking dumb name. I can't remember the regular name that he wanted to go with. So he was trying to repackage himself. Because I guess the Biff Busick character is more so like this like really like overbearing, like manly man, like William Regal type gimmick that he was probably given as a rib by some asshole in New England when he started breaking in. So he wanted to get away from it. Because I think when he wrestled for Lance Storm, he was wrestling as Christopher St. Gerard or Gerard St. Christopher, something to that effect.
Well, this isn't the Biff Busick show, but
I'm a fan. We're talking about things that we're fans of. I'm a fan of the man. I'm a man fan.
He's so I've been watching some of the Wrestling Is shows lately, and he is far and away like the standout on pretty much all of them.
Yeah, I would say between him, Greenant, and Drew Gulak, like that's a trio you can't really fuck with.
No, and even like Anthony Stone, another guy who, back in the early days of Beyond Wrestling, when there was the garage filmings out in Ohio, he was really impressive. And again, it was through that where he got to be in Chikara's Young Lions Cup in 2012. He's on a lot of the Wrestling Is Respect and art shows. He's still prominently featured in Beyond Wrestling. So, you know, I know Beyond Wrestling and the Bidding got flack, like running in front of no fans. What a stupid idea. Like, what is these, just wrestlers marking out for themselves? But you see a lot of the opportunities that they've gotten because of it.
Yeah, I mean, dude, people in, you know, I try not to scale my thoughts just to wrestling, just because I operate mostly in the world of wrestling. You know, I mean, most people are like this in general. Like, people in wrestling are adverse to change, but people in general are adverse to change. So it's like when you introduce something brand new, like, of course people are going to shit on it. And like, I think what a lot of people overlook is that like, we weren't removing fans from the equation. We were changing the way that fans interacted with wrestling at the time that we started. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the first 4 years, all the groundwork that we laid, you know, I feel like American Rana was kind of like our debut.
Absolutely.
And it, you know what I mean? Like, it was because we had 4 years of hype leading into it with so much unconventional approaches. And like, you know, I know that a lot of the guys that, you know, are the quote unquote draws that came to Beyond Wrestling for the first time probably were like, what is this, like fetish wrestling? Is this, you know, backyard wrestling? You know, because they had only heard about it from however many years ago. And then when they were like, oh, this is a state of the art facility. Oh, there's 300 fans there. Like, oh, I guess this is pretty cool. So, you know, I've always said it. It's all about expectations. So with the Beyond Wrestling project, we do our best to try and remove expectations or change the expectations that fans seem to be, you know, set in their ways. And even the wrestlers, you know, because, again, the project was designed first and foremost to benefit the wrestlers involved. And, you know, if we can share the fruits of our labor with anybody else, that's just cream on the cake. I don't think that's an expression.
That is not. It's not. But, you know, we just made it an expression. But one thing, I mean, even if nothing else, like, say it didn't benefit any wrestlers, there's still some quality, good wrestling going on. And so, hey, if nothing else, Who am I to say that I don't want more quality good wrestling in the world out there?
Yeah, and I mean, there's a lot more guys that are starting to get opportunities with some of the wrestling as organizations. You know, like Corvus is a guy that for a long time was really trying to find himself and had this very specific idea of what he wanted to do, but couldn't pull it together. And after one of the clinics that we did at the Wrestle Factory, everything just kind of clicked. And I'm so shocked. I haven't seen any of his appearances for Wrestling Is Cool, but he's such a dislikable person in real life that I can't imagine him wrestling as a babyface. But apparently he's been doing really good on the show so far. I kind of questioned him. I was like, are you wrestling as a good guy and people are into it? Like, total disbelief. But hey, man, if it's working, that means that, you know, again, like, if we couldn't give him the tools to pull it together, at least we were able to give him the platform and put him in contact with the right people that we're able to. So, you know, we try and help guys at all steps of the way.
You talk about American Rana almost being like your debut, and I kind of see Beyond Wrestling in, like, I guess I want to say, like, three different, like, lineages. The first was when it began up until About Time, which was your first live show in summer of 2011. Then it came back in Flesh and all these other shows. And I feel like that kind of ended around when you guys did the St. Louis Anarchy show in June of 2012. Because then you guys kind of went off the radar again and you were doing tapings at the Chikara Wrestle Factory with CZW and starting to hook up with those companies a little more. Guys are going off and doing Chikara and Wrestling Is and CZW and all these other things. But then Beyond Wrestling kind of rose from the ashes of this amazing show, American Rana, just in July. And so it feels like now more than ever, especially when you get guys like Kevin Steen, you know, blowing smoke up your guys' asses and talking about how great the show is and going on his own personal YouTube show to talk about to go out of your way to see the show and pre-order it. It feels like after all this time, maybe you finally arrived and maybe you're going to finally get some of those fans who've been naysayers to accept you.
Yeah. And I mean, I think those reactions are genuine because a lot of the guys contacted me after the show to follow up, which I never get. You know, obviously looking to come back, but in a way that it was just like, wow, like, I guess, you know, I kind of thought that, like, American Rana was going to be, like, a one-time thing. Like, okay, we're going to do this, and then who knows what's going to happen afterwards. I didn't think we were going to do as well as we did, both in terms of the creative execution of the show and, you know, the actual turnout. Going back to what you're saying as far as the three phases of Beyond Wrestling, I kind of view it a little bit differently internally, and I kind of look at it based on the programs that we had built up. Have we talked about this before? I think I might have talked about it with Chris, but just to briefly recap, like, the first major rivalry that we had in Beyond Wrestling was, like, Corvus and Dickinson. Like, we were never able to blow it off because Dickinson hurt his knee, and then Corvus hurt his neck, and then they were both gone. And that was, like, when a bunch of the new guys came and really stepped up. Like, that was when, like, Aaron Epic, Drew Kulak, Biff Busick, you know, guys like that really started to fill in those roles of some of the earlier guys that wrestled for us that weren't there for the time being. And then, like, we really set up that rivalry between Touchdown and Kulak, and, like, we're one show away from blowing it off. And then it was like, well, Touchdown decided he doesn't want to work for Beyond Wrestling ever again. So I kind of view, like, those eras defined that way. And it kind of sucks, like, to hear that, wow, like, we fell off after Double Trouble. Because after Double Trouble, we did, like,
You did Armory Amore.
We did Armory Amore.
But that, and, like, granted, that, like, just saw the light of day.
Yeah, and obviously those are issues.
I didn't mean to say you guys fell off. Like, Beyond Wrestling didn't exist or had fallen off the radar or nothing, but it seemed like that was, like, you know, that show happened and it came out, and there's other shows that happened before that, and there was obviously new content being put on there, and, like, All Aboard happened and things like that. But I felt like after that show and everything up was sort of build up and leading to what happened at American Rana. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I don't know. Just, it sucks because I kind of agree. Like, after Double Trouble, like, it was kind of a, like, a decline. Like, because we did All Aboard, and I think I just went and looked at how many tickets we had for that show. I think we did 12 paid for that show. Of course, Deer Park, New York, like, not a knock at NYWC. Like, they have a really good thing set up with their fan base. But, like, nobody that, you know, we obviously draw basically, you know, mostly based on internet hype, like, a lot of people were just like, we're not going to drive to Long Island. And that was really the first time that it, like, clicked with me, like, oh, shit, like, location is everything. Like, if you don't have a good spot, people aren't coming to your show. And then even when we were doing more of the shows in Bridgewater, like, that was kind of why, you know, we did the Charade Charity Chowdown, obviously as a charity event. I don't think we did too well for that show. I mean, obviously we raised money for him, but like, I was anticipating we were going to have a much higher turnout. And that was when I really started questioning, like, man, like maybe we're not doing well in Bridgewater for a number of reasons, but primarily because, like, you know, if you live in Providence or you live in Boston, it's like a 45-minute drive either way. When we came back for We Care a Lot, I thought, if people can name their own price to come to the show and people could pay a dollar, people can come for free, and this place isn't packed, then, like, maybe it really is something about this building. I mean, granted, I'm sure if we had stronger lineups for the shows that we had in Bridgewater, we would have attracted a few more fans. But the most I had ever seen in that building was the first time that Cole Cabana wrestled there. And it wasn't like a lot more than what we usually have. It was maybe like 40 or 50 than what we usually draw in Bridgewater. So,
and that show also had guys like Mike Quackenbush and Chuck Taylor and a lot of the Chikara guys too. So,
oh, I was actually referring when they were doing the seven levels of hate. There was another company that was running that building.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, yeah. I thought Cabana's first time in the building was Wrestling as Art.
No, the Wrestling as Art show actually that was on a snowstorm. We actually exceeded our expectations for what we were planning. I think we did about 125 that day, which it sucks that if there wasn't a snowstorm, it probably would have been closer to 200 because there were like 400 people the night before in Haverhill. But, you know, a lot of people don't get tickets ahead of time. And then it's just like, oh, there's a snowstorm. Like, I have no commitment to go to the show. But anyway, like, really, in the time that we actually took off from running live events, which was from the Charade Charity Chowdown in November of 2012 until We Care a Lot in June of this past year. I mean, that's a solid 6 to 8 months, depending on how you want to look at it. Everything was just behind the scenes. Like, we got to get geared up for American Rana. Like, we need to make sure we're putting all of our resources into this one show. We need to make sure that we have, you know, the support system with different avenues of online promotion and, you know, connections locally. And, I mean, again, Fent Music played a huge role in that. And going back to what I was saying, like, location is everything. Like, now that we have a tried and true building that is actually in Providence, Rhode Island, not in East Greenwich, you know, 20 minutes away, or in Bridgewater, 45 minutes away. Like, now that we have an actual, like, location in Providence, Rhode Island, I really think that that has a lot to do with it. It's kind of disappointing because when I see ticket sales, too, like, the people that are buying tickets to our shows are, like, coming from New York, coming to Maine. Like, it's something that's so bizarre. Like, what's the appeal of a big city? But it works. You know what I mean? I'm not going to knock it. Like, it's taken us, like I said, about 4.5 years of doing the studio tapings and trying to build our reputation and, you know, try and persuade people into understanding what we're actually about. Like, I don't know, persuade isn't a strong enough word. Like, we had to convince people what our goals were, and how they were looking to improve wrestling. And once we were able to do that, you know, we started to further legitimize. Like you said, we linked up with organizations. I mean, AIW was very instrumental from the start. Then Gabe Sapolsky with Evolve was instrumental. Then it was, you know, working with Chikara, working with CZW. And then it's like, okay, like, if these guys were just backyard wrestling, they probably wouldn't be working with all of these, you know, heavy hitters in the world of independent wrestling. I don't know, man. American Rana was something else.
Well, you know, you talk about location and everything else, and I think that's completely valid. But it seems like for American Rana, as you said, draws in Bridgewater and other places you're running were okay, but not exactly something you could stand on and run shows every month and you know, make a ton of money off of. But
right.
For this,
we would run and we would take a hit of like $1,500 in every show, and then that would be supplemented by like our online income, and you know, then we'd run like a secret sale, and we'd always figure out a way to scrape by. But now we're in a position, at least, you know, after American Rana, heading into Point of No Return, where it's a little bit more comfortable. And that's kind of scary because, like, I don't want to be put in a situation where it's like, oh, well, you know, I already know that we've sold enough tickets for the next show. So instead of going flyering, I'm going to go out drinking. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because that's just, you know, that's the snake eating itself.
But, and it happens, though. It happens.
Oh, I believe it. The thing is, though, is like, it seems like for this show, it stayed true to the Beyond format. There were so many guys from Beyond, but you said, you know what? Fuck it. Let's give this a huge shot. Let's see if bringing guys like, we'll bring back Johnny Gargano. We'll bring back Eddie Edwards for his, you know, he was in the month before, but really this would be sort of his Beyond debut in the rematch against Biff Busick. Kevin Steen Masada up top. Colt Cabana comes in. So it was sort of this attraction where if fans have probably heard of Beyond Wrestling, But it's asking a lot of anybody, really, to take a risk on a brand new person, especially when they're paying for a ticket to come to a show. But if nothing else, you have names like this, and this, A, legitimizes the company, and B, lets fans know, all right, say I don't really care for the Beyond Wrestling guys, at least I know the guys who I do know are going to bring the goods. But I think the show had a really healthy mix of homegrown guys and guys people were familiar with. And the great thing I loved about it was you weren't just saying, ah, let's just do Johnny Gargano versus Eddie Edwards. You know, that's a match that's going to draw. You put Eddie Edwards against Biff Busick, a guy who had been in Beyond Wrestling for a little over a year at that point, maybe even longer. And then JT Dunn, who was also a big part of it, got to face Johnny Gargano. So it's one of those things where you stuck to those guys who had been with you in the harder times and kind of rewarding them with these bigger matches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, like I looked at it, I like to have fun with the fans. I ask a lot of questions on Facebook and Twitter, and most of the times it's to get feedback, but sometimes it is to get a rise out of people. And, you know, when we announce the lineup and it's like, what matches you guys want to see, like Steen versus Gargano? Well, we're not going to do Steen versus Gargano because, one, it seems like we'd be stepping into a political minefield. And two, like, I want to reward our guys, like you said, that have been helping us there. And like, believe it or not, like no word of a lie, like the top three guys that I view, at least in terms of Beyond Wrestling, are like JT Dunn, Anthony Stone, and Biff Busick. And I don't necessarily mean that in ability alone, but like all three of those guys are local to Providence. Like, you know, like being a good wrestler isn't enough. Like you have to be a good hand and you have to be able to help behind the scenes. And, you know, the fact that you're getting buzz in other organizations, like those are the three guys that I really pinpointed for the show. And no word of a lie, I asked all three of them, who do you guys want to wrestle on the show? And I built the card around that. You know, we branded it as the Best of New England Challenge, but Biff told me, he said, put me against Eddie Edwards. Nobody's going to have a better match on the card. He didn't lie. And he didn't lie at We Care A Lot either. And I think that probably his match against Eddie at We Care A Lot and his match against Eddie at American Rana, the two of those are probably the two best matches that we've ever run. You know, I asked Anthony Stone for years. He was telling me, you know, I really want to wrestle AR Fox. Like literally years, because I think we started working with Fox right around Back in Flesh. So that would have been
October 2011?
Yeah, the end of 2011. So since that time, Stone was like, you got to put me with Fox. And I was like, all right, like now we're going to put you with Fox. Like, this is your opportunity to step up and deliver. And I had made a bet with JT. JT was actually the one that helped us get the building for FET. He was there one night. I want to say there was like a domestic abuse rally or something really not in the realm of professional wrestling. He's like, oh yeah, this place is sick. I was like, I've been trying to get in there for a year and a half. Nobody's responding to any of my emails. I was like, you get me contact information, dude. And, you know, you tell me who you want to wrestle. And he's like, all right, I want to wrestle Gargano. And it's like, all right, like you get the building, it's done. And that was the first match that we had booked. So, you know, we built the rest of the card around that. And, it's funny because one night I was out drinking with one of my buddies who was trying to impress a girl, who was a huge wrestling fan in Rhode Island. And he was like, you know, what should I be watching? Like, what should I be getting caught up on? I was just like, dude, like, if you're not watching PWG, you're fucking up. He's like, well, what show should I get? I was like, start with Steen Wolf. And he watched it. He loved it. And then, like, one night we were drinking, and, you know, he was telling me about it. And he was like, dude, you gotta fucking bring in fucking Kevin Steen. Like, can you just have PWG run a show on the fucking East Coast? I was like, nah, man, it doesn't work like that.
He's got no clue.
But I was like, I guess we could work with Kevin Steen. Like, I guess it's like, to me, it was like it was just a completely foreign idea. Like, no, like Kevin Steen's way too big of a deal. Like, he's never going to want to work for Beyond Wrestling. It's not even realistic. And so I was just, you know, like, oh, why? Who would you want to see him wrestle? And he was like, I don't really fucking know. I was like, yeah, man, imagine if he wrestled Masada. And he was like, dude, you got to do it now. And I was just like, fuck, we have to do it now. Like, don't, I'm the type of guy, when you put an idea in my head, like, I can't just be like, ah, that's cool. Like, then I have to do it. And so,
which can get dangerous.
It can get very dangerous, because when we're looking at a lineup like American Rana and our budget is quadruple the biggest budget we've ever worked with, it's like, holy shit, like, what if this doesn't work? Like, I'm going to be broke. Like, I'm not going to be able to buy a car next year. Like, I'm not going to be able to move out. Like, I'm fucked for at least a year. But I had this idea in my head and we had to roll with it. So, and then it was just like, okay, let's just get Cabana in there. Like, let's just be excessive. And, you know, I really wanted one big representative from what I considered at the time to be the top independent wrestling organizations. You know, like, I looked at Kevin Steen as a PWG guy on the show based on the way that I had the discussion with my friend. You know, Eddie Edwards was a strong representative of Ring of Honor. We had Johnny Gargano in my mind representing Dragon Gate, and AR Fox obviously as the champion as well, representing Evolve. And then it was like, Cabana's the guy that represents all of independent wrestling. So again, it was putting together the card and trying to figure out, like, okay, maybe these people don't like CZW, but maybe they like, oh, you know, and Masada obviously representing CZW. So, like, you know, maybe these people don't like CZW, but if they like Ring of Honor, well, then they see Eddie Edwards and recognize him on the card, and maybe they'll give everybody else a shot. So, but yeah, dude, like, you gotta, like, Beyond Wrestling has always been about the guys that come to the studio tapings and put in the time, and, like, they're the ones that benefit the most from, like, the network that we've been able to set up. I mean, JT Dunn is the perfect example of this. Like, through his work with Beyond Wrestling, you know, DJ Hyde saw him wrestle in person at a few of the studio tapings, gave him feedback, and the next time he saw him wrestle, he saw how Dunn had incorporated that feedback into his next match, and so he gave him a shot against David Starr at Tangled Web, and, like, anytime anybody debuts for CZW, they shit the bed. Because it's a very, very difficult crowd to work in front of. And I don't know. Those guys either did a really, really good job, or the crowd was especially forgiving that night. But, like, JT Dunn's probably going to have a full-time spot in CZW. So those are the guys that I like to latch on to in terms of Beyond Wrestling when we get behind them. And obviously, you know, there's varying degrees of success. For some guys, it doesn't take nearly as long. I mean, again, like, ACH came in and with one show, you know, once the tournament for tomorrow was up, he was a hot commodity. And granted, that's all based on his ability. All we were able to do was provide him with the platform and the network to get in touch with different people, to be able to expand his bookings. So when it comes back to what we're trying to do for Point of No Return, it's like, okay, we already gave Anthony Stone a shot. We gave Bit Busick a shot. We gave JT Dunn a shot. Who else can we try and give a shot to? And really the two names that stick out this time is like Aaron Epic, who's going to be doing his, you know, back on his, you know, trying to embark on a singles run, let's say, because for pretty much the entire tenure in Beyond Wrestling, he's been teaming with Sugar Dunkerton and KOA. Well, he's on his own right now for us, at least. For the time being. So we're going to put him up against Matt Taven to see how he can do. And, you know, Eric Corvus, who the crowd has not always responded to well, we're going to put him against Chuck Taylor. If he doesn't get a good reaction against Chuck Taylor, he's probably not going to get a good reaction against anybody, you know?
Right, right. It's really awesome, like, having this conversation kind of like going into your mind for here's what I was thinking and here's how the matches got set up for this big show, because I don't think you hear that very often. So no.
And you know what's really funny, what's really funny about all of it is that I usually don't assign finishes to match unless it's something that's storyline based. And like Jockey and Cole Cabana were like, you know, who do you want over? And I was just like, I don't care. And they were like, no, like, this is your promotion, like, you have to decide. So I was like, I don't know, I guess Cabana. And then the way that it ended up working out is that the only wrestler that won against a quote-unquote outside guy was Anthony Stone when he got the victory over A.R. Fox. Everybody else went under at American Rana to the name guys. And so that win meant so much more. And it's just funny the way things worked out, because it's not even something that I'd considered. Like, it wasn't even intentional. It was just like, you know, these were the ways that the guys planned their finishes to the match. So I haven't even for a long time, I used to try and plan cards ahead of time, like actually try and format them, figure out the match order, you know, the times that was going to be given, like any specific notes. I used to do that weeks ahead of time, and then the card would change so much that I've really gotten in the habit that I only figure that out like a day or two ahead of time. And I'm usually very busy, so it's like the more responsibility I can give to the wrestlers, the more that I can trust them. The less work that it creates for me, and usually the better the match is going to be, because I'm not a wrestler. I have very limited training. I stopped wrestling right after I hurt my knee, which is probably 8 years ago by now. Jesus Christ. They're the experts, so just let them do their thing, and it's going to be okay. Like, one thing that unfortunately I had to learn the hard way is that you can't let the angles get in the way of the match. And so one thing that I'm really trying to do is that we will not have any angles or storyline bell to bell. If we've advertised that match, we're going to let those two wrestlers wrestle the best match they can possibly have. And then even though that sort of limits us creatively, like, I don't want anybody to come out and be like, oh my God, I really want to see Johnny Gargano versus JT Dunn. Oh shit, that match is awesome up until Kevin Steen got involved and punched JT Dunn. Like, you know, I would have really liked to have seen this match, you know, almost like in a vacuum. Like, anything that happens bell to bell almost has to be in a vacuum, so that, you know, the guys can have the best possible contest that they can have, because the fans are coming because they want to see good wrestling.
Right. It's like, sure, it may fit in the context of the show, but let's say it gets thrown up on YouTube or they put on a compilation some years later and you're like, well, that's shitty.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you we got to the part with you being a promoter, but obviously you didn't just wake up one day and start being a wrestling promoter. You had to become a fan of wrestling sometime back in the day. When was that?
Well, I mean, I remember on weekends, both my parents worked, so I would go over Nana and Papa's house, and they'd plop me in front of the TV, and I would watch cartoons on Fox 64, our local Fox affiliate, and then after cartoons, it'd be wrestling. And, you know, I think that Wrestling Challenge, like, this is something that's crazy to me, is that for such a long period of time, like, WWE didn't have any Saturday morning programming. Because, like, when you're a kid, it's not like you can really choose what you want to watch, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, especially nowadays, like, I don't know, like, I'm not a kid, so I guess I don't have that same context, but, like, you wouldn't sit a kid down with a remote and let him flip through, like, 1,500 channels. Like, you'd be like, hey, you know, like, this is what you're watching today. And, you know, give him a few toys and let him be. So, it was like, I never really had the decision as far as what I was watching, but I liked wrestling, and I want to say that I started watching probably, or I mean, I don't know how long I was watching, but I can at least remember watching as early back as like 91 and 92, and like, you know, having distinct memories of like Papa Shango and the Ultimate Warrior. Like, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, like, wrestling really used to scare me as a kid, because I didn't, you know, I didn't know. So, like, when you see black goop dripping out of the Ultimate Warrior's head, it's like, what? Like, what the fuck is that? Because it's presented as though, you know what I mean? Wrestling is always presented as though it's something real that's happening in the real world. You know, it's in a sports complex. Like, I've been to a hockey game before or a basketball game. Like, those are real sports that take place in the sports complexes. So, as a kid, it's like, I didn't think anything different. And then, like, I remember one time, like, Yokozuna did the bonsai drop and, like, sat on this dude's chest and, like, didn't get off. And, like, the commentators are saying, like, oh, my God, this guy's turning blue. And, like, the camera's on him. You can see he's not turning blue. But for whatever reason, it's like, oh, my God, Yokozuna's going to kill this guy. So that's really how I grew up watching. It was just like, I definitely a WWF fan watching on Saturday mornings. And then occasionally I would catch Monday Night Raw when it was on. I went to one house show, I think, for my birthday, maybe in like 94 at the Warwick Musical Theater, which is a venue that no longer runs. It was kind of like an outdoor pavilion that had like a roof over it. And I don't remember what the headlining match was supposed to be. Maybe it was supposed to be like Undertaker versus Yokozuna, but Yokozuna didn't show up, so it ended up being like Undertaker versus Bob Holly.
Tremendous.
Which, like, at, you know, I'm a kid, like, I don't even know, you know? But, like, my dad was like, oh, this is such a ripoff. Like, Yokozuna was advertised. How come he's not here? Which, like, my dad's not even a wrestling fan, so it must have been funny for him, too. And then right around the time that, like, they started putting the warnings on Monday Night Raw, like, oh, like, this like, may not be appropriate for all audiences. I remember, like, watching an episode, for whatever reason, downstairs, and my mother was there, and, like, Jim Cornette called Sonny a slut, and I was just, like, really embarrassed to be watching this in front of my mother, and was just like, I'm not gonna watch this anymore. Like, like, if they're telling me that this isn't appropriate for me, like, I guess I'm just gonna police myself and just, kind of like stop watching. So like, dude, like, I honestly missed the entire Attitude Era. Like, I stopped watching around like 96 and started watching again like around mid 98.
You're like the opposite of every kid ever, because like, as a kid, like, I watched South Park when it was first on, and I was like 10, maybe 9 when it first aired, and I was like, I'm the coolest kid ever because I get to watch this show that I'm not supposed to be watching. And you actually policed yourself. I've never heard of a kid doing this.
I don't know, man. I'm a weird dude. And, you know, around that time, like, I really started liking hockey. And, I mean, it depends, too, like, your friends at the time, like, what they're interested in. And these two kids that lived a couple blocks away that I grew up with, like, they liked wrestling, but they didn't, like, really like wrestling the way that I did. Like, every now and then we would go wrestle in this kid's backyard in, like, fifth grade. But the big thing was hockey. Like, we were really into hockey. Like, we liked the Mighty Ducks movies, and we would watch hockey. And we would get, like, hockey jerseys for our birthdays and Christmas, and we would play hockey video games. And I remember one time one of the kids came up to me and was like, dude, who do you think would win in a fight, Stone Cold Steve Austin or Goldberg? And, like, we were so into hockey at the time that I thought he meant Goldberg, the goalie.
Yes.
From the Mighty Ducks.
Tremendous.
And I was just like, I didn't even know that there was a wrestler named Goldberg in WCW. Like, that's how far removed from wrestling I was at the time. I barely knew who Stone Cold Steve Austin was. And believe it or not, I think right around the time that I got back into wrestling was maybe like around the time they started Sunday Night Heat. And like, I remember seeing like Mankind like rocking back and forth in the ring, like cutting this promo. I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like watching it and then like turning it off and be like, no, like I have to turn this back on. And, you know, I was big into video games growing up. I had just gotten an N64. I was a little late on that, and I only had Tetrisphere and Diddy Kong Racing. And for whatever reason, I decided the next game that I was going to get was going to be WWF Warzone. And so, like, I was like, well, I have the wrestling video game. I should probably start watching wrestling again. And, you know, it was eighth grade at that point, I want to say. And, like, one of the kids that I started going to school with, like, for whatever reason, like, he thought that he would be cool to me if he told me that he really liked wrestling. And then, lo and behold, find out, like, he wasn't even a wrestling fan. But that's just how kids are, you know?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And so, like, we kind of both started, like, watching seriously and getting back into it. And even though, you know, we've sort of missed the best period, like, obviously, that was still when wrestling was at its biggest because there was so much hype coming out of it. I remember one of my earlier wrestling-related moments is I was at gym class in eighth grade, and I picked up a traffic cone, and I yelled, suck it. I have no idea why.
Did you just, like, pick it up and hold it in the air, or did you like, pretend it was your cock, or?
No, like, I picked up the cone and, like, put it to my mouth and, like yelled to
it. Oh, okay,
to,
okay.
Like, make it that much louder, so, like, everybody on the football field knew that Drew Cordero yelled, suck it. And they made me change and, like, I had to go talk to the teachers, and they sent me home for the day. And that was the only time in my entire life I ever got punished. But then after that, it was just like, fuck, like, I love wrestling. Like, I don't know what it was about it. And then, I don't know, my fandom, I don't want to say it tapered off, but, like, then once I went to high school, two of my friends in particular, Alan Pettirudo and Matt Carpenter, were just, like, diehard wrestling fans. And I remember them telling me about, like, dude, like, if you think what you see on TV is cool, like, you got to check out wrestling on the indies. Or I'm sorry, wrestling. They were, like, wrestling, you know, on the indies. But I was just, like the indies? Like South Asia? Like, because I knew that there was wrestling in Japan. So by the indies, I thought they meant, like, the Indian Ocean, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I thought there was, like, this crazy wrestling scene in, like, you know, because, again, I knew there was wrestling in Japan, so I thought that there was this crazy wrestling scene in, like, South Asia. Little did I realize, like, that he meant independent wrestling. And, you know, they were hardcore into the Japanese wrestling at the time, so they'd come over and they'd bring, like, the best of Japanese exploding death matches, and then, like, you know, some stuff from, like, All Japan, and then some stuff from NOAH, like, really big into, like, Kobashi, Misawa, Kawada, those guys. And I don't know, I always liked it, like, I could appreciate it, but it was never, like, anything that I was like, yeah, I need to go out of my way on my own to seek this. And, like, my friend Matt Carpenter was, like, a tape trader, too, so, like, sometimes he would trade tapes, and, like, there would be, like, backyard wrestling included with it, and then he would, like, because, like, somebody that was doing the tapes, like, was including their own backyard wrestling for free, like, as a way to get word out about their backyard wrestling.
Right.
And, like, that led him to this message board called the Backyard Wrestling Link. And then, like, Alan and Matt decided, like, we need to start our own backyard wrestling thing. But we didn't have a backyard to do it. So, like, we did it in this kid's basement. And so, like, between those guys showing me, like, international wrestling and then, like, us kind of running backyard wrestling for a while, like, that's what really kept my interest in wrestling. Like, it kind of, I don't know, like, I'd always watch Raw. But it was never, like, really a priority. It was more so, like, the wrestling that we felt we had sort of an influence on. And then the first time that Ring of Honor came to Boston, they were just like, Christopher Daniels is going to be there. We got to go. And, like,
Was this the August 2002 show?
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe, I don't even know if Christopher Daniels appeared on that one, but he had appeared for Ring of Honor a few times before that.
He was, because I know they did the Jay and Mark Briscoe singles match was, like, is one thing. And then Styles versus Key was the main event, I think.
I mean, either way, we had never seen anything like that.
Right.
And we couldn't get a ride up there. Everybody's parents were working. And believe it or not, one of our high school teachers actually gave us a ride that we were really cool with. Obviously not a wrestling fan, like, kind of crazy to even think about that, but it was just like, from there, I was like, okay, like, I'm in for life. And, you know, I was always in and out of Ring of Honor. I would always, like, I'd be into it for a couple months, and I'd be like, this sucks, and then go on the boards and complain about it. And then I remember a really exciting day was all the shit that went down with Feinstein, because it was just like, oh, man, like, I remember there being like an AOL like instant message chat room with like 60 people that were like from the Ring of Honor board, like discussing like, man, like, is this it? Like, is Ring of Honor done? And obviously things kept moving forward. And it's funny because I feel like Ring of Honor growing up, like watching it as a fan, like it always changed so much so quickly, because as soon as a guy would get over, like he would get taken either by WWE or TNA. And it's funny because Ring of Honor feels like it's so different than what it was when I first started watching it. But then it's like, it's not like it was just all of a sudden one day. It just fucking, you know, up and became something different. Like, there were so many gradual changes throughout Ring of Honor's entire history that there was really no point where it was like super stable for an extended period of time. And so through Ring of Honor, I kind of like, I don't know, I kind of shit the bed on Ring of Honor. I just got sick of it. And once I finished up with school, I started working with Kaiju Big Battle, and somebody I knew through Backyard Wrestling at that time, Jonah Block, who ended up, you know, wrestling in a limited capacity for Beyond Wrestling, was telling me like, oh, there's this company called Chikara. They put up weekly podcasts. I was just like, all right, cool. Like, I don't really give a shit. And then we started working with Kaiju, and I guess Kaiju had worked with Chikara earlier in the year before I had come on board. And, you know, one of the reasons they wanted me to start working with Kaiju was to see, like, okay, how can we better attract wrestling fans? Like, you know wrestling, at least from a fan's perspective, because I hadn't really done anything professionally at that point. Like, what can we do to better attract wrestling fans? And then, like, once I kind of put two and two together, like, oh, shit, you guys worked with Chikara. Oh, Chikara has this podcast. Like, people that don't even follow wrestling that closely, like, still know what it is because of this podcast. Like, it's this revolutionary idea. Like, we should probably try and link back up with them. And once we did, I want to say it was the Royal Rumble in New York City in 2008 where John Cena came back.
Right.
We had a Kaiju show that month, so like a couple weeks from then, like early February at Webster Hall. So I said, okay, like let's go out and fly a Royal Rumble and like that'll be a good time to target people. But earlier in the day was the Chikara, before they even did the season premiere, it was a show in Hellertown where they had a, like the Plantain wrestle a dog.
Yeah, it was the Plantain, the Moravian Greyhound, and Hydra.
And Hydra, yeah. And just being there for that show, I was just like, man, like I really want to be a part of like of this. This is awesome. And you know, as far as my fandom, I guess into my adulthood, it was like being able to see Chikara in person and seeing a totally different approach from what I remember Ring of Honor being. You know, Ring of Honor was always about the athletes, and like it was like a stunt show. And I mean, you know, that's how I remembered it. That wasn't always the case. You go back and look at some of the cards, they had like bunkhouse brawls and, you know, bringing some fucking old guys like Ox Baker having his gimmick table set up. Like, you know, you look back at Ring of Honor as this like cutting edge, like highly athletic wrestling. That wasn't always the case. But the approach that Chikara took to independent wrestling was so different. And that's when I really started seeking out other forms of independent wrestling too. But it was through Chikara that it really kept my fandom alive. Because, again, with Ring of Honor, I was always just in and out.
I have a question that leads into something. Did you work for Chikara in some capacity during that time? Or were you just kind of like a Kaiju-like representative?
When I got fired from Kaiju, I asked Quack if I could help out with Chikara. And he said that any issues that I had with any other organizations were left at that organization. He would be more than happy to bring me on board in some capacity. And so maybe from like May of 2008 until December of 2008, when I moved to Ohio, like whenever they would have shows, it would be my responsibility to contact all of the local charities in the area and see if they wanted ticket donations. For two reasons. One, obviously your house looks better. If you're not going to sell all your seats anyway, like you might as well get some people in there because they might turn into paying customers. And two, and obviously much more importantly, like it's really important to establish yourself in the community and with however you can to give back. And I always thought that that was something really cool about Chikara, was they did want to take care of the people that were supporting them. And that was just one of the ways that they did it. I would write press releases from time to time and try and get them out, but I don't know. Newspaper's not the way to go. It was kind of a waste of time. I think it's really funny, though, because like, you know, it's not like Quack was like, you know, I would still come to the shows and like hang out and watch like when they were in New England, but it's not like Quack would be like, hey, this is the guy that's, you know, getting all of the, you know, handicap fans to come to the show for free. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not like he would point me out to everybody in the locker room. And I remember one time going downstairs, this is right around the time that Loud and Noxious had started, like after the show, just to like, you know, catch up with him. And he sent me this text message about like, you know, I've never been so embarrassed in my entire life. You don't understand the extent which you humiliated me. Like, you can't just go walk into somebody else's locker room. And it was just like, you know, I know that I worked for Chikar during that period of time, but I don't think many other people do. Cause I was perceived just to be like a fan that was just like roaming around the locker rooms. Like, and nobody had the courage to like stand up and tell me like, hey kid, like get the fuck out of here. But I remember, I think we did security. I did security, one of the Young Lions Cups, you know, up in Framingham, Massachusetts, when they were in that awesome building in Framingham. There was like this really cool, I mean, I call it a mom and pop video game store, but it was obviously run by just like kids our age, that had like, you know, imports and all sorts of other stuff, kind of like a Funko Land, like a good place to go get used games. And like, I remember setting up like a Raw versus SmackDown tournament with the Super Smash Brothers. You know, so I helped out where I could, but you know, was I on Chikara's payroll? No.
Cause the reason I ask, I don't know if you even remember this, but, the reason you and I know each other, cause we both wrote for the Cool Kids Table website way back in the day. Cause you did, I think it was called The New Approach, some like a TNA. I don't remember if it was like a TV show recap or like a column you did. Do you remember this at all?
Yeah. And it was very short lived because the reason that I did this is that I knew that I wanted to get geared up for wrestling. And I was like, I didn't have a problem watching, you know, the major indies or keeping up with WWE, but I fucking hated TNA. And I was just like, the only way that I'm going to be able to watch TNA in order to make sure that I've really got my finger on the pulse of what's going on in wrestling is if I have some sort of commitment. And so I thought that by writing for a wrestling site about TNA, it would force me to do it. And I think that I maybe only did it 5 or 6 times, and I was just like, I just gave up. That was right around the time that I moved to Ohio.
Okay, because the reason I brought up the Chikara thing is because I think it was like a year or so after the website closed, I was just talking to Brad and Jake, who had run the website. And Brad was like, yeah, I remember like he emailed us and like talked about how he had worked for Kaiju and Chikara. And he was like, I don't know why that would make like – I don't know why he thought that would like impress us to make it seem like, oh, I can write about TNA because I work for these other companies. It's like you're just writing a fucking column about TNA.
To me, my perspective on that was that like, oh shit, like I don't want to catch heat because I work within the realm of wrestling, so I really shouldn't be commenting on it. You know, it's like you know, you never see me post, or very rarely do you see me post as Beyond Wrestling on Zandig fans, like chiming in with any opinion. Like if you're within the wrestling industry, like in order to stay professional, you really can't share your thoughts on that. So like, that's why that was where Denver, Colorado, I came up with. That was, I want to say the handle that I used while writing those articles.
It was, yes.
Kids Table, was just to kind of keep my identity, you know, unknown in the event that things picked up with Chikara or Kaiju. I didn't want it to be the type of thing where it's like, and I'm sure they probably still would have worked with me anyway, but it's a matter of professionalism. You know, if you're a professional, then your opinions on wrestling, you keep to yourself. So
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I could understand how that would get misconstrued.
You talk about professionalism. You've also done a ton of commentary, you know, and you know, you worked that in Chikara, obviously AIW, I think is what you, was that where you started doing commentaries for AIW?
Yeah, because John Thorne said, hey, man, he sent me a text message. I wish I had my phone still that had it so I could remember, so I could recite it verbatim. It was like, hey, man, I hope this doesn't sound gay, but I really like the sound of your voice. Can you do commentary for us? I was like, well, it sounds gay, but I'll do it anyway. And they had me with Benny Boone and Wadsworth, which Wadsworth, I honestly think, could probably make a career out of commentating. He's probably my favorite commentary partner, and we had really good chemistry. And it's hard because, you know, I do so much commentary on my own now that when I get matched up with other guys, like, I just don't have that same timing. I'm so used to having to call it all by myself. But doing it with Wadsworth, I thought we had expert timing. And, you know, granted, I wasn't always the most professional. I would, you know, show up to some of the shows drunk and obviously, you know, screaming over the house mic for 4 hours was probably grating. But it was a good way to get my foot in the door. And it became a challenge because it was like, oh shit, like this isn't really coming to me that easily. This is something that I actually have to work on to improve. How do I get better at it? oh, I don't know. Like, am I just going to watch WWE? Like, they do, you know, because the commentary on WWE is totally different. Like, not only are they trying to tell a story, but they have, like, a million things that they have to plug that are relevant to the story that have to be, like, woven in at any given time. Like, if I'm calling an indie match, it's a totally different, you know, it's a totally different approach. So it was the type of situation where it was just like, well, I'm going to just do as much commentary as I can, and hopefully I'll improve. And you know, when we even started Beyond Wrestling, like, I was really hoping that I could do commentary with somebody else. But it eventually got to the point where it's like, okay, this DVD is not going to get out unless I take the reins on this and do it by myself. Like, I don't really want to do it, but, you know, if these are the cards that have been dealt, like, this is what I got to play with. So that's really how I started doing commentary on my own, too. But, yeah, I've done commentary for Chikara, Wrestling Is, AIW, CZW. People always remember me for the commentary I did for one of the Juggalo Championship Wrestling shows, Death in the Valley.
Was that a live deal, or was this a post-production commentary?
It was post-production. It was a Smart Mark-produced DVD, and it was – the main event was, like, JC Bailey versus Drake Younger in, like, a 40 panes of glass match.
Okay.
So,
first I've heard of it. So,
yeah, no, but fans will always like, that's the one show that people are always like, oh, Denver, Colorado. I remember you did commentary on this. So, yeah. Like, I also did commentary on King of Trios. Like, you don't remember that?
That's right. Did you do commentary? Because you did on this year's King of Trios, I know. Did you do the commentary for, like, the big 8-man comedy match?
Or is no.
That? No. Okay. God, I thought you had.
No, I did the tag gauntlet.
Oh, that's right. Okay, maybe that's why I got confused.
I got to do commentary for Joshi Mania. That was awesome because I knew nothing about women's wrestling and still don't.
That's right. It was. That's right. You did on night two. Was that your Chikara commentary debut?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had Nick Manawa on the show last week, and he does commentary for IW Mid-South now, and we talked about how challenging commentary is, and I feel like, again, like I saw on that show, I feel like that's one of those things that fans kind of take for granted. Like, oh, come on, that's easy. You just say some move names and talk about a story. But so, once you get in there, it seems really terrifying. And after the episode, Jerome, who's, you know, done commentary for AEW Chaos and Pro Wrestling Collision, a bunch of other companies, he was like, yeah, it is terrifying. And it's really not that easy.
It's so hard. I mean, I have tried to get out of the habit of doing it. But, like, for the We Care A Lot release, like, I stayed inside all day yesterday and spent 6 hours editing my commentary for it. So, because I want to make sure that, you know, we give our fans the best releases possible. But when you're doing it live, I remember one time, like, for the first Wrestling Is Awesome show, I got really nervous doing commentary with Quack. I'm not sure why. I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things. And I think I said something like a piano falling out of a window. And then, like, he just looked at me like, and I was just like, oh, my God, like, why did I say that? I can't take it back. Like, they're not going to edit this. Like, what does that even mean, a piano falling out of a window? So,
I want to go watch. What match was that?
It was the main event of that show. It was the Devastation Corporation 3.0.
Oh, okay. I was hoping it was Busick versus Dasher because I'd like to rewatch that match.
Oh, that match is awesome.
Well, Busick's the man. It all goes back to how great Biff Busick is.
Yeah, you know, like, he did a lot in this last year because he debuted for Beyond Wrestling in May of 2012. Then he didn't really do anything until Swamp Sessions when he wrestled Gulak. Then, like, it started to pick up with him. But, like, you know, he's got that New England mentality, like, oh, I'm not, you know, or he did, and we were able to help break him. But, I mean, okay, like, let me rephrase this. Like, he's obviously coming up in New England, he had some of those New England tendencies, but obviously he was willing to break out on his
own. Okay, so I'm not from New England. What are New England tendencies?
Like, you operate in New England. You know what I mean? Like, independent wrestling is stupid. International wrestling is stupid. Like, if you are in New England, like, it's because you want to go to WWE. So you wrestle in New England until you go to WWE, or you wrestle in New England until you don't go to WWE.
Sure.
But, like, you know, I hate it because now that we've run in New England, and it's like, there's certain guys that I want to put on the card, and it's like, well, it's not fair that I'm putting you on the card just because you're a local draw, and I'm a fan of your work. But you haven't been to our studio tapings where I have to leave some of my guys that have been much more devoted to the project because, you know, you won't take the trip once every 3 months, you know, 4 hours down to Philadelphia so that you can wrestle, you know, in front of Quack and DJ Hyde, who would probably in return end up using you on their shows because you're good. And so you would expand not only, you know, your fan base, but you'd also be getting a lot more paydays out of it. I don't mean to paint Biff like that, but it was after Swamp Sessions that Biff started coming around to some of these seminars and clinics. I mean, ACH was actually pretty instrumental in getting Biff in CZW, Because Biff and ACH were supposed to do All Aboard, but CCW was running that day, and so they ended up going down to CCW, and I think maybe ACH teamed with Rich Swann, and Biff got a dark match, but then, like, from there, everything was built up. I don't remember where I was going with this, though. Why am I talking about Biff Music right now?
Because you're talking about the commentary for wrestling is awesome, and then the...
Oh, okay. Yeah, good. And so, like, that was October. Biff debuted for Wrestling is Awesome right at the start of December. He broke his ribs. He was out for 3 months. So, like, the fact that he has done so much in this last year, even though he had, like, a three-month injury, it's so crazy. To me, he's this year's ACH. Like, the fact that he's been able to wrestle everywhere and... I mean, granted, like, the scene isn't the way that it was a few years ago. Like, it's not the type of thing where it's like, you know, oh, the Oceanic Portal's wrestling for CZW. Well, you're not wrestling for Wrestling Is now. And that's cool. And, you know, that was one of the things that is that I never, with Beyond Wrestling, like, we never played those games. Like, we were working with Chikara and CZW simultaneously. And, you know, if it was ever a problem, it was never brought to my attention. And so the fact that Biff has been able to work for the Wrestling Is and for CZW and is now going to be working for Gabe as well, like, you know, obviously had some high-profile matches for AIW. Like, kid's doing all right for himself.
What impresses me most is you talk about it sucks that guys who work harder, you talk about with him how guys go out, they do the studio tapings and everything else, so they're working harder, they're earning it more. The thing that impressed me most was it was last week, and you did the tapings at the Jakarta Wrestle Factory in the CZW schools, and you posted pictures on the Instagram of this, and I see guys like JT Dunn and Eric Corvus still going to these seminars when A, they've already done them before, and B, are already wrestling in companies like CZW and the Wrestling Is groups. Like, you know, they're guys who, if they really wanted to, could probably rest on their laurels and not have to go to the seminars and be okay just doing the Beyond live shows and studio tapings. But they're obviously eager and hungry to learn more, and so they're still doing these, and I think that garners, at least from my perspective, a lot of respect.
Absolutely. You know, I think you said it perfectly. Like, they don't need to be there in terms of their position in the world of wrestling. They want to be better wrestlers. You know, if you have the opportunity, like, especially the ones that we do at the Wrestle Factory, because there's the clinic built into it. I mean, dude, that was like an 11-hour day. We showed up at 10 a.m., and left. No, it was longer than 11 hours. It was 12 and a half hours. We showed up at 10 a.m. and left at 10:30. You know, it was like, okay, you do like a half hour of warm ups, then like three and a half hours of like actual in ring technique. We break for lunch. We come back. We do a lecture, then a question and answer. Then we assign matches. And then after every match, the participants are taken to the back and given like 5 to 10 minutes of like direct feedback. I think, you know, that was something that I was telling Radican when I did the podcast yesterday, is like, we've made these organizations that much more accessible for anybody, which is really crazy to think about. And I think that for the value, what you get out of it, like, is really, you know, cause I think that in most instances, like when you do these like clinics, it's like a paid tryout. And in that instance, it's like pay to play. And that kind of undermines your own ability as a wrestler. So if it's a type of situation where we have to have money involved in order for guys to get a look, like, I want to make sure they're getting the absolute best value possible. So, but yeah, you know, we still work with, you know, Chikara or what's left of Chikara, you know, the Wrestle Factory, the Wrestling Is organizations. We still work with CZW, and it's awesome to be able to, like, I remember how nervous I was the first time that I had to talk to any of those guys. It's like, who the fuck am I? But it's cool that, like, to earn the respect, I guess, of your peers that are also promoters or event organizers or however you want to describe it, because then it's like, okay, like, you're not looked at as like, this guy is below me and I'm just going to use him. Like, we're going to work together and it's going to raise both of our profiles.
So I guess the million-dollar question I have to kind of wrap things up before we get into plugs and all that is, why do you do this? What inspired you to create Beyond Wrestling just for the benefit of trying to get these, I guess in the long term, make better wrestlers and wrestling better as a whole? Like, why?
This should have been the first question, because I could probably talk about this for an entire hour. No, dude, I mean, Beyond Wrestling was born out of backyard wrestling. I saw a lot of guys that were better than what they were doing, that were professionally trained, that didn't like the politics, that would come to these backyard shows and wrestle somebody else that was trained just to do the match that they wanted to do. And it was awesome, and it needed to be shared with more people. And so it was like, how can we come up with a way that these guys that are my friends, you know, that's how it started. I didn't want to help out wrestlers. I wanted to help out my friends that happened to be wrestlers. You know, guys like I think Corvus is a prime example of that. Like, he's somebody that I actually had, you know, who had already been with Jersey All Pro for like 3 or 4 years, but for some reason was doing these backyard wrestling shows because he didn't like the way that he was being booked. And it's not even necessarily the way that he's being booked, because that makes it seem like, oh, you know, you don't know your role, like you are unprofessional, but more so the way that you've been treated. It's like, how can we create this environment that's free of politics to let guys do what they want, to wrestle to the best of their abilities, and see where it gets them? And it's so crazy that we just ran American Rana, because we never had any goals of doing anything like that. You know, like when Beyond Wrestling was really first put in motion, it was like, how can we run shows that don't rely on a live gate or DVD sales? Because it seemed like if there was an independent wrestling organization that was in jeopardy of going out of business, it was because that these were the two revenue streams that they were relying on, and for some reason that they were faltering. And so when we first met, you know, Chris Dickinson was not somebody that was a friend of mine before Beyond Wrestling started. But then once he came in, and it was just like, oh man, like, this can be scaled to helping more than just my friends. This can be scaled to helping other wrestlers. And, you know, honestly believe, like, growing up, like, wrestling was not always consistent in my life, but when I was a wrestling fan, it was like that took precedence over all the other interests that I have in my life. And so I felt like, you know, I had met a lot of people, had gotten a lot of different travel opportunities, you know, whether it was traveling to independent wrestling shows, or like if I was backyard wrestling in Ohio or something like that, something stupid like that. Like it was through wrestling that I was able to meet a lot of people and have a lot of awesome travel opportunities. And so I thought, as soon as I got involved, I want to give back as much as I can, because I want to be able to create these other opportunities for future fans and wrestlers alike.
Well, I think it's awesome that there's something out this like there for wrestling fans, wrestlers, for everybody. It produces a lot of great matches, gives a lot of guys opportunities, so on and so forth. So I think you're doing a good thing for wrestling. And pretty much the mantra I've had in this show is wrestling fans who do good for the world of pro wrestling and they give back instead of taking away, I'm all for it. And I think you've been very successful in that so far.
Yeah, dude, and as long as we don't lose sight of that, you know, like, even with these live shows, like, yeah, it's difficult to balance. Like, would I have liked to have pulled the trigger on Steen versus Gargano? Yeah. But at the end of the day, I want to reward my guys, because if it wasn't for the guys like Dickinson and Corvus and, you know, Gulak and you know, KOA and everybody else that makes it a point. Dude, like, does Gulak need to go to a Wrestling Is or a Chikara or a CZW clinic?
He's CZW world champ.
Exactly. And yet he's still there, because that's how much it means to him, and that's what he gets out of it. And that, to me, like, that perfectly exemplifies and validates everything that I have to do on my end to make sure that we can still push this project forward. Because at the end of the day, like, before guys like Eddie Edwards and Kevin Steen and Johnny Gargano were involved with Beyond Wrestling, like, it's all of the guys that helped to get us to that point that need to reap the benefits from it. For somebody like Colt Cabana, like, who can come into Beyond Wrestling for once or twice a year, like, you know, obviously to get paid and to interact with those fans in that part of the country that he normally doesn't get, you know, in front of, like, there's not much that Beyond Wrestling can do to help Colt Cabana. But for somebody like Anthony Stone or JT Dunn or Biff Busick, like, maybe we could help turn them into the next Colt Cabana or the next Kevin Steen or the next Johnny Gargano. And it hasn't happened yet, but that doesn't mean it's something that we're not going to keep striving for.
Well, you know, like we said, American Rana was a massive success, I think, at least critically, from the buzz coming out of the show. And
yeah, and we will be shipping those by the end of September.
Excellent. So, yeah, people can go to lookmanofans.com to buy the DVD, check out all of other Beyond Wrestling's past titles. But you said, hey, this could have been the make or break for the company, and it seemed to have made it, because you got another big show coming up this weekend.
Yeah, dude, Point of No Return is a crazy card. I wanted to sort of take the American Rana formula and change some of the variables, but, I mean, headlined by Drew Gulak and Biff Busick versus Eddie Edwards and Roderick Strong. You know, it's always funny how two guys are always linked together, either as partners or opponents. And I think it's because it's a matter of respect. You know, there's no personal issues between Biff and Gulak. They love to get in the ring against each other. And you know, I think that that's going to help them really work together and be on the same page as a tag team. Eddie Edwards and Roderick Strong, I love them as the Dojo Bros. I think the Dojo Bros are the best tag team in the country, probably short of the Young Bucks, because come on, it's the Young Bucks. So that's going to be a huge, awesome match to be able to present. We've got Kevin Steen versus Dickinson. Steen wasn't even originally scheduled to be on Point of No Return, but it was just like after the match with Masada, it's like, how can we not bring him back? And, you know, we are going to give JT Dunn another shot to test himself, this time up against Michael Elgin. Elgin was actually the first wrestler that we had booked for Point of No Return, and I wasn't even sure what we were going to do with him until after American Rana. And I really thought that JT Dunn, even in a losing effort to Gargano, like really deserved the opportunity to test himself again against Michael Elgin. So that's probably like a match. Like people would say like, oh, you have Michael Elgin. Like how come you're not putting him against Chuck Taylor? It's like, why are you putting him against JT Dunn? It's like, well, when you see what him and JT Dunn do, like if it ends up being a good match, like maybe you're going to become a fan of JT Dunn after that. So, you know, again, it's all giving back to that. We do have Chuck Taylor versus Corvus, Matt Taven versus Aaron Epic, as I had touched on. After the success of the first tag team four-way scramble at American Rana, we're going to try and outdo that. We've added ACH and Shinran as a tag team known as Fusion Dance, as well as the tag team of the Abnormals, which is the Black Baron and AR Fox. So they'll be going up against the Minutemen and the Hoods, which that match is just going to be a little too crazy. I probably will be like nervously pacing like in the corridor or FET like while that match is going on. That's not one that I'm going to be able to watch and enjoy. It's like that's one. It's like after the bell sounds like, okay, who died? Then we take it from there. And then we originally had a Team Tremendous versus a Usurper and Jocka scheduled, but Bill Carr was unable to make it. So we're going to do a four-way with Dan Barry, Usurper, Jocka, and Johnny Cockstrong, which my biggest regret about American Rana is not being able to find something for Johnny Cockstrong, because he's certainly one of the guys that's been there right from the start. And as unconventional as his gimmick is, like I love him to death, so I'm really happy that we were able to find something for him. And I don't know, what other match am I forgetting about? I feel like I named 7 of 8 matches, and the 8th match is probably really good. And now I'm going to feel like an asshole and have to pull up this website and stall by talking and describing what I'm doing by clicking on a link. All right, here we go. Nicholas Cage versus Anthony Stone. I mean, those guys have been back and forth since developmental hell. And honestly, like that match, probably more so than any of the other ones on the card, is like going to be the biggest test, because like Anthony Stone was made at FET by being AR Fox last month. Like Nicholas Cage didn't have the opportunity to compete on the show. You know, these are really some of the old guard that have been there from the days in the garage in Elyria, Ohio. Like if they don't impress, then that looks bad on Beyond Wrestling. You know, it's like, okay, we know that guys like Eddie Edwards and Roderick Strong are going to be able to come in and kill it. If our homegrown guys are put there out there on their own and they bring down the card, then again, like that doesn't give that sort of perception extends to everybody on the roster just by proxy. So those guys are going to have their work cut out for them, but they have awesome chemistry, so I'm really looking forward to that match. Oh, well, I guess by the time this podcast comes out, the stipulation will be announced. It's going to be an I Quit match.
There you go. You heard it here, regardless.
So, I mean, if you're within the driving distance to Providence, Rhode Island, like, come on, it's $15 for tickets in advance. Once FET tells us that we have to take them off our website, then they'll only be able to get them on their website or at the door, and they're much more expensive, both those avenues. So please make sure, lookmondofans.com, get your $15 tickets to Point of No Return. We already sold out of VIP, but we might have some more open day of once we get everything set up and see if we have any more spots to comfortably seat people on the stage. So if you're interested in getting the VIP ticket, show up early. And I don't know, maybe more importantly than the wrestling, definitely come hungry, because Championship Melt is going to be there with the gourmet grilled cheeses once again. And I don't know, I think my mother got jealous, so she's decided to expand the amount of items that we have at the concessions inside to try and compete with Championship Melt, which will include meatballs and sausage and peppers. And it's also worth noting that we're going to be running fan contests to intermission, one for the guys, one for the girls. The guys' contest will be an eating contest. The girls' contest will be a twerk off, which we've had this idea since before like twerking got popular like 2 weeks ago. Because this one fan keeps sending us pictures of his girlfriend's butt. And it's like, you can't send them to wrestlers and tag them and then have the wrestlers like overlook it. Like, I've got my rosters begging me, like, you gotta get this girl to come shake her butt on the show. It's like, yeah, I guess I do. So Point of No Return, Sunday, September 15th, FET Music, Oneyville, neighborhood of Providence, Rhode Island. Tickets are $15 in advance, $20 at the door. The lineup is I don't know. It's probably an even better lineup on paper than American Rana. So, I mean, can we top American Rana? Whether or not we can is irrelevant. It's what we're striving for.
Go watch Denver, Colorado fail or succeed.
Wow.
We'll see. It's going to be one or the other. Well, okay. So you've plugged the show plenty now. If people can't make it to the show, where can they get in touch with you, and where can they go find out about Beyond Wrestling?
Yeah, I mean, just don't worry about getting in touch with me. You can follow Beyond Wrestling at Beyond Wrestling on Twitter, and we're trying to beef it up on Instagram, which is pretty much just me taking pictures of what I'm watching on TV in my basement while I'm editing, since I don't really get out much. But that's good, right? I posted a picture of the Golden Girls, and everybody seemed to like that. Facebook.com/Beyond Wrestling. That'll be all of the latest updates going to the show in case there's any lineup changes or any additions or any surprises or secrets. And definitely the big one. This is the big one. Save the best for last. YouTube.com/Beyond Wrestling. Subscribe for free weekly matches. Just in the past couple weeks alone, we put up Jonathan Gresham versus Biff Busick, Andrew Everett versus Drew Gulak, and Uha Nation versus Chris Dickinson. Like, those are matches that you should be paying a premium for, but we really want to make sure that guys like Biffick, is that a name? That's not his name. They don't even call him that in the wrestling is. Biff Busick, Dickinson, Everett and Gulak, like those are guys that like are awesome right now and you should be watching more of. So instead of making you pay for it, like, just do them the favor, put in the 12 minutes, watch their matches, and hopefully it'll raise their profiles and raise your interest in Beyond Wrestling as well. So we're getting there, man. We're really building the channel, and I'm really happy with the development of it. And long term, I would love to get to the point where we don't have to release DVDs or VODs or MP4s or mess with any of that confusing format. I'd like to put everything up for free. So the more people that subscribe to the channel, the closer we get to that. And isn't that what everybody wants? Something for nothing. Not just something, but like the best wrestling that we can possibly provide you with for free.
Right. They're not just giving you like shit matches for free. This is actually some good stuff.
Oh, I hate that. Do you know how long it took us to overcome that? Because everybody else would just put their garbage for free online. It's like, why would you, if this is the largest audience you're going to attract, why would you want to put your shittiest matches up? It took us forever to try and break that. And we still fight against it day by day. Like, oh, we're going to put up this pre-show match for free. Well, if it was your pre-show match and it sucks, then maybe you shouldn't have even run it in the first place.
Yeah. Not to mention, like, what's going to give me the incentive to go dig deeper into your company if you're putting up crap online?
Exactly.
So, well, hey, man, thanks for taking the time to sound do this. I know you've done probably like 2 or 3 dozen podcasts for PW Ponderings in the past, but this also goes up on the Wrestle Folks Network. So hopefully people who have never heard of you or Beyond Wrestling before will now give it a shot. So thanks for sitting down and chatting.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Anytime.
Well, for better or worse, that's Denver, Colorado, Drew Cordero, call him what you will. I call him a friend. I'm glad I got to have the chance to have him on this podcast to get to know him a little better and for you all to get to know him as I know him. And I've been fortunate enough to follow Beyond Wrestling from the beginning, thanks to him. He's been a big supporter of what I've been doing and for Pro Wrestling Pondering since its inception. So I'm glad, again, that I got to have him on here and promote his show, one of the biggest shows in Beyond Wrestling history, if not the biggest. Pretty easy to argue, I should say, that it is. Again, you can go to facebook.com/beyondwrestling to get all the details on the events this Sunday in Providence, Rhode Island, all the details, the card, if everything else, if you didn't catch it already on the podcast, you can look at it all there. It's all written and nice and all that. Now I got to take care of a little bit of housekeeping before we get out of here. I still do not have a graphic or banner or anything for iTunes. It's been a week. I'm a little disappointed in all you people. But it's okay. You have a chance to redeem yourself. You can still send it to me. If you have something in mind, please send the image to kford13@gmail.com. I'm accepting as many submissions as you want. I have no ideas for what I want for this. Maybe something wrestling related, I guess, since that's kind of what the show's about. Don't want any false advertising. Send it my way. The best one will be put up on iTunes, and I'll give you a high five, a follow on Twitter, I guess. Whatever. Just tell me what you want in response to giving me that sweet graphic. But you got to make the graphic first and send it my way, and I got to approve it, so. And if you really want a Twitter follow, if I follow you and end up being really annoying, I'm just going to unfollow you, just so you know. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at K413. You can chat about wrestling or comics or movies or fun things, just not sports, okay? There's way too much of that crap on Twitter as it is, and I don't have any clue what's going on in that world anyway, so you're wasting your characters on me if that's what you want to talk about. Also, be sure to follow at PW Ponderings on Twitter, in addition to getting all the news. And when we put up reviews and podcasts and stuff, we also post results over the weekend for all the big indie wrestling shows, and even smaller ones, I guess, too. We'll live tweet shows if we possibly can. For instance, I might be live tweeting Ring of Honor's Death Before Dishonor 11 show in a couple weekends. No guarantees, but just keep that in mind. So, if you want to get results as fast as you can for big independent wrestling shows, follow at PW Ponderings on Twitter. Be sure to follow at WrestleFolks on Twitter as well. That is the other podcasting network I'm a part of, syndicated on Mondays. Go listen to the home, the mothership show, flagship show. Yeah. WrestleFolks with Tom Crean as the host. And be sure to listen to the Nick Manawan Reed Bentley Variety Hour. And, of course, on PW Ponderings, we also have other podcasts. You can listen to Schools In with Kevin Harvey. Great guest every single week. The Shane Hollister interview he just did was pretty interesting. The interview show with Jerome Cuson. And we have the weekly newscast with Chris GST and Des Delgadillo. Guests all around everywhere. And then, of course, Fan to Fan. Keep listening to that. Send me feedback on Twitter however you like the show. And be sure, again, to follow PW Ponderings and WrestleFolks on iTunes. I think that's just about everything. So, thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with another great show. And thank you for being a fan. So here I am, growing old.